Chapter 8. George's room in the house on Naval Street. 1. Richard Tozier turns off the radio, which has been blowing out Madonna's Like a Virgin on WZON, a station which declares itself to be Bunker's AM stereo rocker, with a kind of hysterical frequency. Pulls over to the side of the road, shuts down the engine of the Mustang the Avis people rented him at Bunker International, and gets out. He hears the pull and release of his own breath in his ears. He has seen a sign which has caused the flesh of his back to break out in hard ridge of goose flesh. He walks to the front of the car and puts one hand on its hood. He hears the engine ticking softly to itself as it cools. He hears a joyous scream briefly and then shut up. There are crickets, and as far as the soundtrack goes, that's it. He has seen the sign, he passes it, and suddenly he is in Derry again. After 25 years, Richie Trashmouth Tozier has come home. He has... Burning agony suddenly needles into his eyes, breaking his thought cleanly off. He utters a strangled little shout, and his hands fly up to his face. The only time he felt anything even remotely like this burning pain was when he got an eyelash caught under one of his contacts in college, and that was only in one eye. This terrible pain is in both. Before he can reach even halfway to his face, the pain is gone. He lowers his hands again slowly, thoughtfully, and looks down Road 7. He left the turnpike at the Edna Haven exit, wanting, for some reason he doesn't understand, not to come in by the turnpike, which was still under construction in the Derry area when he and his folks shook the dust of this weird little town from their heels and headed out for the Midwest. No, the turnpike would have been quicker, but it would have been wrong. So he had driven along Route 9 through the sleeping nestle of buildings that was Haven Village, then turned off on Route 7, and as he went the day grew steadily brighter. Now this sign, it was the same sort of sign which marked the borders of more than 600 main towns. But how this one had squeezed his heart. Penobscot, County, Derry, Maine. Beyond that, an elk sign, a rotary club sign, and completing the 20, a sign proclaiming the fact that Derry Lions roar for the United Front. Past that one, there is just Route 7 again. Continuing on in a straight line between bulking bunks of pine and spears. In this silent light as the day steadies itself, those trees look as dreamy as blue-gray cigarette smoke stuck on the moveless air of a sealed room.
Derry, he thinks. Derry, God help me. Derry, Stony Cross.
Here he is on Route 7. 5 miles up. If time of tornado has not carried it away in the intervening years, will be the ruling farms, where his mother bought all of their eggs and most of their vegetables. 2 miles beyond that, Route 7 became Whitsun Road, and of course, Whitsun Road eventually became Whitsun Street. Can you give me hallelujah wall without enderman? And somewhere along there, between the ruling farms and town, he would drive past the Powers place, and then the Henlon place. A mile or so after Henlon's, he would see the first glitter of the Kindish keg and the first spreading tingle of poison green. The loose lowlands that had been known for some reason as the Barrens.
I really don't know if I can face all of that,
Rage thinks.
I mean, less than the truth here, folks. I just don't know if I can.
The whole previous night has passed in a dream for him. As long as he continued traveling, moving forward, making miles, the dream went on. But now he has stopped, or rather the sign has stopped him, and he has awakened to a strange truth. The dream was the reality. Derry is the reality. It seems he just cannot stop remembering. He thinks the memories will eventually drive him mad, and now he bites down on his lip and puts his hands together palm to palm, tight, as if to keep himself from flying apart. He feels that he will fly apart. And soon, there seems to be some odd part of him which actually looks forward to what may be coming, but most of him only wonders how he's going to get through the next few days. He... And now his thoughts break off again. A deer is walking out into the road. He can hear the light thud of its spring-soft hooves on the door.
Richard's breath stops in mid-exhale, then slowly starts again. He looks dumbfounded, part of him thinking that he never saw anything like this on Rodeo Drive. No, he'd needed to come back home to see something like this. It's a doe.
No, a deer, a female deer.
A voice turns merrily in his head. She's come out of the woods on the right and pauses in the middle of Route 7, front legs on one side of the broken white line, rear legs on the other. Her dark eyes regard Rich Dozier mildly. There is interest in those eyes, but no fear. He looks at her in wonder, thinking she's an omen or a portent or some sort of Madame Sonka shit like that. And then, quite unexpectedly, a memory of Mr. Noel comes to him. What a start he had given them that day, blasting in on them in the wake of Bill's story and Ben's story and Eddie's story. The whole bunch of them had damn near gone up to heaven. Now, looking at the deer, Rich draws in a deep breath and finds himself speaking in one of his voices. But for the first time in 25 years or more, it is the voice of the Irish cop, one he had incorporated into his repertoire after that memorable day. It comes rolling out of the morning silence like a great big bowling ball, and is louder and bigger than Richie would ever have believed.
Jesus Christ, on a jump top! Sure you're driven cracked. What's a nice girl like you doing out in the wilderness, dear? Jesus Christ, you'll be getting on home before I decide to tell father who staggers on you.
Before the echoes half died away, before the first shocked giant begins scolding him for his sacrilege, the doe flicks her tail at him like a truce flag and disappears into the smoky looking firs on the left side of the road, leaving only a small pile of steaming bullets behind to show that, even at 37, Richard Dozier is still capable of getting off a good one from time to time. Richie begins to laugh. He's only chuckling at first, and then his own ludicrousness strikes him. Standing here in the dawn light of a May morning, 3,400 miles from home, shouting at a deer in the accents of an Irish cop. The chuckles become a string of giggles. The giggles become guffaws. The guffaws become howls, and he's finally reduced to holding on to his scar while tears roll down his face, and he wonders dimly if he's going to wet his pants or what. Every time he starts to get control of himself, his eyes fix on that little clump of bullets and he goes off into fresh gales. Snorting and snickering, he is at last able to get back into the driver's seat and restart the Mustang's engine. An Orinco chemical fertilizer truck snores by in a blast of wind. After it passes him, Rich pulls out and heads for Dora again. He feels better now. In control. Or maybe it's just that he's moving again, making miles, and the dream has reasserted itself. He starts thinking about Mr. Nell again. Mr. Nell and that day by the dam. Mr. Nell had asked them who thought this little trick up. He can see the five of them looking uneasily at each other, and remembers how Ben finally stepped forward, cheeks pale and eyes downcast, face trembling all over as he fought grimly to keep from blubbering. Poor kid probably thought he was going to get 5 to 10 in Shawshank for backflooding the drains on Witcham Street. Rich thinks now, but he had owned up to it just the same. And by doing that, he had forced the rest of them to come forward and back him up. It was either that, or consider themselves bad guys. Cowards. All the things their TV heroes were not. And that had welded them together, for better or worse. Had apparently welded them together for the last 27 years. Sometimes, events are dominoes. The first knocks over the second knocks over the third, and there you are. When Richie wonders, did it become too late to turn back? When he and Stan showed up and pitched in, helping to build the dam? When Bill told them how the school picture of his brother had torn its head and winked? Maybe. But to Rich Dozier, it seems that the dominoes really began to fall when Ben Hemscom stepped forward and said,
I sold them.
To.
How to do it? It's my fault.
Mr. Nell simply stood there looking at him, lips pressed together, hands on his creaking black leather belt.
He looked from Ben to the spreading pool behind the dam, and then back to Ben again. His face that of a man who can't believe what he is seeing. He was a burly Irishman, his hair a premature wet, combed back in neat waves beneath his peaked blue cap. His eyes were bright blue, his nose bright red. There was a small nest of barsh capillaries on his cheeks. He was a man of no more than medium height, but to the five boys arrayed before him, he looked at least 8 feet tall. Mr. Null opened his mouth to speak, but before he could, Bill Denbrough had stepped up beside Ben.
It was my idea,
he finally managed to say. He heaved in a gigantic, gulping breath, and as Mr. Null stood there regarding him impassively, the sun tossing back imperial flosses from his butt, Bill managed to stutter out the rest of what he needed to say.
It wasn't Ben's fault.
Ben just happened to come along and show them how to do better of what they were already doing badly.
Me too,
Eddie said abruptly, and stepped up on Ben's other side.
What's this, me too? Mr. Nell asked. Is that your name or your address, Booker?
Eddie flushed brightly. The color went all the way up to the roots of his hair.
I was with Bill before Ben even came, he said. That was all I meant.
Richard stepped up next to Eddie. The idea that a voice or two might cheer Mr. Nell up a little, get him thinking jolly thoughts, popped into his head.
On second thoughts
were for Richie extremely rare and wonderful things. Maybe a voice or two might only make things worse. Mr. Nell didn't look like he was in what Richie sometimes thought of a checklicious mood. In fact, Mr. Nell looked like maybe checks were the last thing on his mind. So he just said,
I was in on it too,
in a low voice, and then made his mouth shut up.
And me,
Stan said, stepping next to Bill. Now the five of them were standing before Mr. Nell in a line. Ben looked from one side to the other. More than dazed, he was almost stupefied by their support. For a moment, Richie thought all Haystack was going to burst into tears of gratitude.
Jesus,
Mr. Nell said again, and although he sounded deeply disgusted, his face suddenly looked as if it might like to laugh.
A sorrier bunch of boyos I ain't never seen. If your folks knew where you were, I guess there'd be some hot bottoms tonight. I ain't sure there won't be anyway.
Richie could hold back no longer. His mouth simply fell open and then ran away like the gingerbread man, as it so often did.
How's things back in the old country, Mr. Nell?
It buckled.
Ah, you're a sight for sure eyes, sure and megora. You're a lovely man, a credit to the old saw.
I'll be a credit to the seat of your pants in about 3 seconds, my dear little friend,
Mr. Nell said dryly. Bill turned on him, snarled.
For God's sake, Richie, shut up!
Good advice, Master William Denbrough,
Mr. Nell said.
Albert Sack doesn't know you're down here in the barns playing amongst the floating charges, does he?
Bill dropped his eyes, shook his head, wild roses burning his cheeks. Mr. Nell looked at Ben.
I don't recall your name, son.
Ben Hanscom, sir,
Ben whispered. Mr. Nell nodded and looked back at the dome again.
This was your idea?
How to build it, yeah.
Ben's whisper was now nearly inaudible.
Well, you're a hell of an engineer, my boy, but you don't know jack shit about this here barns or the drainage system, do you?
Ben shook his head. Not unkindly, Mr. Nell told him,
there is two parts to the system. One part covers solid human waste. Shit, if I'd not be offending your tender ears. The other part carries grey water. Water flush from toilets or run down the drains from sinks and washing machines and showers. It's also the water that runs down the gutters into the city drains.
Well, you've caused no problems with the solid waste removal, thank God. All of that gets pumped into the Kendis keg a bit farther down. There's probably some almighty big potties down that way, half a mile drying in the suns, thanks to what you've done. But you can be pretty sure that there ain't shit sticking to anyone's ceiling because of it. But as for the grey water, well, there's no pumps for grey water. That all runs downhill in what the engineer voyeurs call gravity drains. And I'll bet you know where all them gravity drains end up, don't you, big boy?
Up there,
Ben said. He pointed to the area behind them, the area they had in large part submerged. He did this without looking up. Big tears were beginning to curl slowly down his cheeks. Mr. Knot pretended not to notice.
That's right, my large charm friend. All them gravity drains fed into streams that fed into the upper burns. In fact, a good many of them little streams that come trickling down our grey water and grey water only. Coming out of drains you can't even see. They're so deep buried in the underbrush. The shit goes one way and everything else goes the other. God praise the clever mind of man. And did it ever cross your mind that you'd spend a whole lifelong day paddling around in the wispy and all wash water?
Eddie suddenly began to gasp and had to use his aspirator.
All you did was back water up into about 6 or 8 central catch basins that serve Wichemin Jackson in Kansas and 4 or 5 little streets that run between them.
Mr. Nell fixed Bill Denbrough with a dry glance.
One of them serves your own hearth at home, young Master Denbrough. So there we are, with sinks that won't drain, washing machines that won't drain, also pipes pouring mural into cellars.
Ben let out a dry barking sob. The others turned toward him and then looked away. Mr. Nell put a large hand on the boy's shoulder. It was curious and hard, but at the moment it was also gentle.
No need to take on, big boy. Maybe it ain't that bad, at least not yet. Could be I exaggerated just a mite to make sure you took my point. They sent me down to see if a tree blew down across the stream. That happens from time to time. There's no need for anyone but me and you 5 to know it wasn't just that. We've got more important things to worry about in town these days than a little backed up water. I'll show you my report that I located the blowdown and some boys came along and helped me shift it out of the way of the water. Now that I mentioned you by name, you'll not be getting any citations for them building in the barns.
He surveyed the 5 of them, then was furiously wiping his eyes with his handkerchief. Bill was looking thoughtfully at them, and he was holding his aspirator in one hand. Stan stood close by Richie with one hand on Richie's arm, ready to squeeze, hard, if Richie should show the slightest sign of having anything to say other than thank you very much.
You always got no business at all in a dirty place like this,
Mr. Nell went on.
There's probably 60 different kinds of disease breathing down here.
Breathing came out breathing, as in what a girl may do with her hair in the morning.
Down one way, streams full of piss and grey water, muck and slop, bugs and brambles, quick mud. You got no business at all in a dirty place like this. 4 clean city parks for you boys to be playing ball in all day long, and I got you down here, Jesus Christ.
We like it down here,
Bill said suddenly, indefinitely.
When we come down here, nobody gives us any stick.
What did he say?
Mr. Nell asked Teddy.
He said, when we come down here, nobody gives us any static,
Eddie said. His voice was thin and whistling, but it was also unmistakably thin.
And he's right. When guys like us go to the park and say we want to play baseball, the other guys say, sir, you want to be second base or third?
Richie cackled.
And he gets up a good one. And you are there.
Mr. Nell swung his head to look at him. Richie shrugged.
Sorry, but he's right. And that's right, though. We'll like it down here.
Richie thought Mr. Nell would become angry again at that, but the white-haired cop surprised him. Surprised them all. With a smile.
Well, he said, I like it down here myself, as a boy, so I did. And I'll not forbid you, but hark to what I'm telling you now.
He leveled a finger at them, and they all looked at him soberly.
If you come down here to play, you come in a gang like you're now, together. Do you understand me?
They nodded.
That means, together, all the time, no hide and seek games where you split it up 1 and 1 and 1. You will know what's going on in this town. All the same, I don't forbid you to come down here. Mostly because you'd be down here anyway. But for your own good, here or anywhere around, gang together.
He looked at Bill.
Do you disagree with me, young Master Bill Denbrough?
No, sir,
Bill said.
We'll stay to...
That's good enough for me, Mr. Nell said. Your hand on it.
Bill stuck out his hand, and Mr. Nell shook it. Richard shook off Stern and stepped forward.
Sure and big or ah, Mr. Nell, you're a prince among men, you are. A one man.
He stuck out his own hand, seized the Irishman's huge paw, and flicked it furiously, grinning all the time. To the amused Mr. Nell, the boy looked like a hideous prodigy flanking the Roosevelt.
Thank you, boy,
Mr. Nell said, retrieving his hand.
You want to work on that a bit. As of now, you sound about as Irish as Groschomars.
The other boys laughed, mostly in relief. Even as he was laughing, Stern shot Richie a reproachful look.
No map, Richie.
Mr. Nell shook hands all around, gripping Ben's last of all.
You've got nothing to be ashamed of but judgment, big boy. As for that door, did you see how to do it in a book?
Ben shook his head.
Yes, figured it out.
Yes, sir.
Well, if that don't beat Harry, you'll do great things on there. I've no doubt, but the Barons isn't the place to do him.
He looked around thoughtfully.
No great thing will ever be done here. Nasty place,
he sighed.
Turn it down, boys. Dear boys, turn it right down. I believe I'll just sit me down in the shade of this bush here and bide away as you do it.
He looked ironically at Rich as he said this last, as inviting another mini outburst.
Yes, sir,
Rich said humbly, and that was all. Mr. Nell nodded, satisfied, and the boys fell to work, once again turning to Ben, this time to show them the quickest way to tear down what he had shown them how to build. Meanwhile, Mr. Nell removed a brown bottle from inside his tunic and helped himself to a large gulp. He coughed, then blew out breath in an explosive sigh and regarded the boys with watery, benign eyes.
What might you have in your bottle, sir?
Richie asked from the place where he was standing knee-deep in the water.
Richie, can you ever shut up?
Eddie hissed.
This?
Mr. Nell regarded Richie with mild surprise and looked at the bottle again. It had no label of any kind on it.
This is the cough medicine of the gods, my boy. Now let's see if you can bend your back anywhere near as fast as you can walk your tank.
3. Bill and Richie were walking up Witcham Street together later on. Bill was pushing Silver after first building and then tearing down them. He simply did not have the energy it would have taken to get Silver up to cruising speed. Both boys were dirty, disheveled, and pretty well used up. Stan had asked them if they wanted to come over to his house and play Monopoly or Parcheesi or something, but none of them wanted to. And it was getting late. Ben, sounding tired and depressed, said he was going to go home and see if anybody had returned his library books. He had some hope of this, since the Derry Library insisted on writing in the Borrower Street address as well as his name on each book's pocket card. Eddie said he was going to watch The Rock Show on TV because Neil Sedaka was going to be on and he wanted to see if Neil Sedaka was a negro. Stan told Eddie not to be so stupid. Neil Sedaka was white. You could tell he was white just listening to him. Eddie claimed you couldn't tell anything by listening to them. Until last year he had been positive Chuck Berry was white. But when he was on Ben's stand, he turned out to be a negro.
My mother still thinks she's white, so that's one good thing, Eddie said. If she finds out he's a negro, she probably won't let me listen to his songs anymore.
Stan bet Eddie 4 funny books that Neil Sedaka was white, and the two of them set off together for Eddie's house to settle the issue. And here were Bill and Richie, headed in a direction which would bring them to Bill's house after a while, neither of them talking much. Richie found himself thinking about Bill's story of the picture that had torn its head and winked. And in spite of his tiredness, an idea came to him. It was crazy, but it also held a certain attraction.
Billy, my boy, he said. Let's stop for a while. Take 5. I'm dead.
No such luck,
Bill said. But he stopped, let Silver carefully down on the edge of the ground theological seminary lawn, and the two boys sat on the white stone steps which led up to the rumbling red Victorian structure.
What a day,
Bill said glumly. There were dark purple spotches under his eyes. His face looked white and used.
You better call your house when we get to mine, so your folks don't go bananas.
Yeah, you bet. Listen, Bill.
Richie paused for a moment, thinking about Ben's mommy, the slipper, and whatever Stint had almost told him. For a moment, something swam in his own mind, something about that Paul Bunyan statue out by the city center. But that had only been a dream, for God's sake. He pushed away such a relevant thoughts and plunged.
Let's go up to your house, what do you say? Take a look in George's room, I want to see that picture.
Bill looked at Richie, shocked. He tried to speak, but could not. His stress was simply too great, his shuttle forsaking his head violently. Richie said,
you heard Daddy's story, and Ben's. Do you believe what they said?
I don't know. I think they must have seen something.
Yeah, me too. All the kids that Fink killed around here. I think all of them would have had stories to tell too. The only difference between Ben and Eddie and those other kids is that Ben and Eddie didn't get caught.
Bill raised his eyebrows but showed no great surprise. Richie had supposed Bill would have taken it that far himself. He couldn't talk so good, but he was no dummy.
So, no dig on this a while, Big Bill, Richie said. A guy could dress up in a clown suit and kill kids. I don't know why he'd want to. Nobody can tell why crazy people do things. Right? Right. It's not that much different than the Joker in a Batman funny book.
Just hearing his ideas out loud, excited Richie. He wondered briefly if he was actually trying to prove something or just throwing up a smokescreen of words so he could see that room, that picture. In the end, it probably didn't matter. In the end, maybe just seeing Bill's eyes light up with their own excitement was enough.
But where does the picture fit in?
What do you think, Billy?
In a low voice, not looking at Richie, Bill said he didn't think it had anything to do with the murders.
I think it was George's ghost.
A ghost in a picture?
Bill nodded. Richie thought about it. The idea of ghosts gave his child's mind no trouble at all. He was sure there were such things. His parents were Methodists, and Richie went to church every Sunday and to Thursday night Methodist Youth Fellowship meetings as well. He knew a great deal of the Bible already, and he knew the Bible believed in all sorts of weird stuff. According to the Bible, God himself was at least one-third ghost, and that was just the beginning. You could tell the Bible believed in demons because Jesus threw a bunch of them out of the sky. Well, Chicklicious ones, too. When Jesus asked the guy who had them what his name was, the demons answered and told him to go join the Foreign Legion. Or something like that. The Bible believed in witches. Or else, why would it say, "Thou shalt no suffer a witch to live"? Some of the stuff in the Bible was even better than the stuff in the horror comics. People getting boiled in oil or hanging themselves like Judas Iscariot. The story about how wicked King Jesus fell off the tower and all the dogs came and licked up his blood. The mass baby martyrs that had accompanied the births of both Moses and Jesus Christ. Guys who came out of their graves or flew into the air. Soldiers who witched the uncles. Prophets who saw the future and fought monsters. All of that was in the Bible, and every word of it was true. So said Reverend Craig, and so said Richie's folks, and so said Richie. He was perfectly willing to credit the possibility of Bill's explanation. It was the logic which troubled him.
But you said you were scared. Why would George Ghost want to scare you, Bill?
Bill put a hand to his mouth and wiped it. The hand was trembling slightly.
He's probably mad at me for getting him killed. It was my fault. I sent him out with the
He was incapable of getting the word out, so he rocked his hand in the air instead. Richie nodded to show he understood what Bill meant, but not to indicate agreement.
I don't think so, he said. If you stabbed him in the back or shot him, that would be different. Or even if you, like, gave him a loaded gun that belonged to your dad to play with and he shot himself with it. But it wasn't a gun. It was just a boat. You didn't want to hurt him. In fact,
Richie raised one finger and waddled it at Bill in a lawyerly way.
You just wanted the kid to have a little fun, right?
Bill thought back, thought desperately hard. What Richie had just said had made him feel better about George's death for the first time in months. but there was a part of him which insisted, with quiet firmness, that he was not supposed to feel better.
Of course it was your fault. That part of him insisted. Not entirely, maybe, but at least poorly. If not, how come there's that cold place on the couch between your mother and father? If not, how come no one ever says anything at the supper table anymore? Now it's just knives and forks rattling until you can't take it anymore and ask if you can be excused, please.
It was as if he were the ghost, a presence that spoke and moved, but was not quite heard or seen. A thing vaguely sensed but still not accepted as real. He did not like the thought that he was to blame, but the only alternative he could think of to explain their behavior was much worse. That all the love and attention his parents had given him before had somehow been the result of George's presence, and with George gone, there was nothing for him. And all of that had happened at random, for no reason at all. And if you put your ear to that door, you could hear the winds of madness blowing outside. So he went over what he had done and felt and said on the day Georgie had died, part of him hoping that what Richie had said was true, part of him hoping, just as hard, it was not. He hadn't been a saint of a big brother to George, that much was certain. They had had fights, plenty of them. Surely there had been one that day? No, no fight. For one thing, Bill himself had still been feeling too punk to work up a really good quarrel with George. He had been sleeping, dreaming something, dreaming about some turtle, funny little animal. He couldn't remember just what, and he had awakened to the sound of the diminishing rain outside and George muttering unhappily to himself in the dining room. He asked George what was wrong. George came in and said he was trying to make a paper boat from the directions in his best book of activities, but it kept coming out wrong. Bill told George to bring his book. And sitting next to Rich on the steps leading up to the seminary, he remembered how George's eyes lit up when the paper boat came out right, and how good that look had made him feel. Like Georgie thought he was a real hotshot, a straight shooter, the guy who could do it until it got done, making him feel, in short, like a big brother. The boat had killed George, but Richie was right. It hadn't been like handing George a loaded gun to play with. Bill hadn't known what was going to happen. No way he could. He drew a deep, shuddering breath, feeling something like a rock, something he hadn't even known was there, go rolling off his chest. All at once, he felt better. Better about everything. He opened his mouth to tell Richie this and burst into tears instead. Alarmed, Richie put an arm around Bill's shoulders. After taking a quick glance around to make sure no one who might mistake them for a couple of fecklers was looking,
"You're okay," he said. "You're okay, Billy, right? Come on, turn off the waterworks."
"I didn't want him to get killed,"
Bill sobbed.
That wasn't on my mind at all.
"Please, Billy, I know it wasn't," Richie said. "If you'd wanted to scrap him, you would have pushed him downstairs or something."
Richie patted Bill's shoulder clumsily and gave him a hard little hug before letting go.
"Come on, quit bawling, okay? You sound like a baby."
Little by little, Bill stopped. He still hurt, but this hurt seemed cleaner, as if he had cut himself open and taken out something that was rotting inside him. And that feeling of relief was still there.
I didn't want him to get killed,
Bill repeated.
"And if you tell anybody I was crying, I'll burst your nose."
"I won't tell," Rich said. "Don't worry. Who was your brother, for God's sake? If my brother got killed, I'd cry my fucking head off."
You don't have a brother.
"Yeah, but if I did?"
You would?
"Course,"
Richie paused, fixing Bill with a worried eye, trying to decide if Bill was really over it. He was still wiping his red eyes with his snot rag, but Richie decided he probably was.
"All I meant was that I don't know why George would want to haunt you. So maybe the pictures got something to do with, well, with that other The clown.
Maybe. George doesn't know. Maybe he thinks...
Rich understood what Bill was trying to say, and waved it aside.
After you croak, you know everything people ever thought about you, Big Bill.
He spoke with the indulgent air of a great teacher correcting a country bumpkin's future ideas.
It's in the Bible. It says, yeah, even though we can't see too much in the mirror right now, we will see through it like it was a window after we die. That's in 1 Thessalonians or 2 Babylonians. I forget which. It means...
I see what it means,
Bill said.
So, what do you say?
Huh?
Let's go up to his room and take a look. Maybe we'll get a clue about who's killing all the kids.
I'm scared to...
I am too,
Rich said, thinking it was just more scent. Something to say that would get Bill moving, and then something heavy turned over in his midsection and he discovered it was true.
He was scared, Green.